Hello, friends. Welcome to What Time Was I Born? An astrology podcast where I interview people through the lens of their birth chart. My name is Nadine, and I'm an astrologer based in New York City. You can find me on Instagram at NadineJane_astrology or on my website, www.NadineJaneAstrology.com. And yes, you can book a birth chart reading with me there. On today's episode of What Time Was I Born, I am speaking with Kat Thomas. She is not only a Libra and a friend of mine, but she is a human rights defender who litigates in civil court on behalf of survivors of gender-based violence and sexual abuse. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the parts of her chart that led her to not only be a lawyer, but to be this specific kind of lawyer, and the parts that inspire her about her job that aren't just the day-to-day. There's a lot of bigger picture things going on with her that brought her to this type of career, but also life path in general. If you are interested in the intricacies of her chart, she is a Sagittarius rising. But also, given the year that she was born, she actually has a lot of outer planets in Sagittarius as well, including Uranus, Neptune, and Jupiter, and so those all fall in her first house as well. Her sun and moon are in Libra, and that's going to be in her 11th house. She has Mercury, Venus, and Mars all in Virgo, and those are going to be in the 10th house of career, fame, and honor. So this episode is pretty awesome. I'm going to leave her contact information at the end of this episode in case this inspires you or hits home with you in some way, shape, or form. Hi, Kat. Welcome.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
So before we get into the reading part of this interview, I just want you to explain to people, well, obviously I know, what do you do as your job?
Yes, I am an attorney, and specifically I work with victims of sexual violence. So I represent victims of child sex abuse, rape, sexual assault in civil litigation.
Mm-hmm. And how, like, let's say someone has experienced something of that nature and they contact you, like, how do you proceed from there?
Sure. So I do not do anything on the criminal side. I'm not a prosecutor or anything like that on the criminal side. I work with victims who are seeking compensation for the injuries they've suffered as a result of the abuse or the assault. Mm-hmm. So if they've, had to have therapy and treatment, again, any kind of pain and suffering, we try to seek compensation as a remedy for the harms they've suffered.
I see. So it's not someone who's trying to put someone in jail. They're trying to find other means to...
Correct.
Since this is a hard topic for people to confront and talk about in general, how have people, like... Has it been hard to find clients, or has it surprised you that people have been more than willing to come to you? How has that worked?
Yeah, it's actually kind of the other way. I am a litigator in New York. And New York just passed in August this Child Victim Act. And so there's this, I'm explaining only in brief. There's more to this law than what I'm explaining right now. But one
Google
part,
it if you want.
Yeah. One part of this law is that for 1 year, victims of child sex abuse that previously couldn't bring a civil claim, they couldn't sue for the injuries they suffered, now have this 1 year. So if someone is now 80 years old that suffered child sex abuse, before in the 60s or 70s, they now have a right to bring a civil lawsuit in court for this 1 year. Whereas
in the 1 year being 2019?
Yeah, it's August 14, 2019 till August 14, 2020.
Oh, wow. So it's picked up a lot since.
And so, so we've had calls regarding this new law.
Okay. And then I know that there's some lawyer term for this. They weren't able to file those claims because it was out of
this
that word.
Yeah, a window, the statute of limitations.
Yeah, exactly.
So all cases have a time to which you can bring a lawsuit. So if you trip and fell on the sidewalk, you only have so much time to file a lawsuit for that trip and fall.
Why is that?
I don't know. There's several reasons. One is it's kind of a due process, right? So say somebody was bitten by a dog, say you're a dog owner and somebody's going to sue you because of a dog bite. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have to, not know for 20 years mm-hmm. whether or not they can bring a lawsuit against you or not,
Oh,
does that
I
make
see.
Sense? It's like they only have 3 years and that's it.
Got it.
Or whatever the time limit is. So it kind of is it's a due process, or it's kind of fairness, so that the defendant's not wondering for 50 years if they're going to be sued. They only have this time frame. But however, with child sex abuse, it's so constraining on the victim. It's so constraining. Time limitations are awful on people that have suffered child sex abuse, because oftentimes people have delayed memories. They don't remember it until they're in their 50s. They can't even, when you're a child, you don't even know that this is a harm sometimes that you can seek recovery for. I mean, there's so many barriers to actually accessing justice to be compensated. So that's why advocates don't believe in any statute of limitations when it comes to child sex abuse, just because the harm, you know, it's usually the victims that's having to front all the costs, and they're the ones that are suffering and having to pay for their own harm. So we want to shift that and have the perpetrators have to pay, or negligent institutions that allowed it to happen.
What I'm thinking about is just a 15-year-old going through something like this. I just feel like the likelihood of them. Like, do you think, obviously it's 2018 through 2020, do you think something's going to change around this in the long run?
Yeah, so that's actually the other part of the statute. So there's two parts. One is this window that allows people any age. It's to help people that were already suffered because of that statute of limitations. We're saying we're going to give you this 1 year. Yeah, we're going to give you this 1 year. It doesn't matter if you're 32, doesn't matter if you're 52, you have 1 year because your claim was previously time barred.
Got it.
So the second part of the statute is, say there's a child being abused right now as we speak, like they're 12. That child now has until they're age 55 to bring a lawsuit.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that's the other side.
And that was a change that happened recently.
So if they were not previously time barred, meaning they were not previously kept from coming to court because of that statute of limitations we're talking about, they now have until they're 55. It's a little bit tricky, but it's ages 21 and 23. So if you're younger than age 21 or 23 right now, you have the ability to bring a lawsuit until you're 55.
Wow.
I mean, I'm saying that a little carefully because it kind of depends on the situation, who you're suing. So you, again, need to consult an attorney, because just to iron up the details on the ages. But yeah.
By the way, if you're listening and your ears are perking up because you had no idea something like this was possible, I'm going to include Kat's information at the end of this podcast for how you can contact her.
Absolutely. And there's something called the National Crime Victim Bar Association, and they're a great resource for anyone, or Child USA. They are a great resource in explaining all this, explaining, like, if you're still confused, like, if you're still confused by everything I said, but, you know, experienced something this horrific and want to know more information, yeah, I'm happy to provide that. But even talking to an attorney to see what your options are is important.
Right. But if you are in New York, we're going to give you Kat's contact information at the end.
I'd be happy to answer questions.
All right. So last question that's probably totally now feels a little bit off topic, but what is your relationship with astrology, anything up till now?
You know, honestly, I was thinking it was just you, our friendship. And then, but before that, when I lived in India for a little bit, and I sought out an astrologer, because that, in the part of India I was in, it was huge. I mean, you didn't have a wedding without seeking the astrologer. And so really big part of the community I stayed.
How long were you there? And what ages?
I was in India three separate times, all throughout college. I did two legal internships there. And then before that, did a semester abroad as an undergrad. But I think it was my second trip I sought out an astrologer. And so, you know, I don't remember much about it at all. I don't, except I'm not supposed to wear diamonds.
Oh, interesting.
Apparently, I think,
and do you stick to that? Like, did that sink
in
for you?
No, not at all. I have no idea what that was about. No.
Was it future? Was it a predictive reading, or did they tell you just, like, about who you were?
Remember? I don't even remember. And I think he wrote it in Hindi. I think he wrote it in, like, the Sanskrit. So, but he did speak English, so. I don't remember anything else about it, really.
But did you get something out of it at the time? Like, do you remember being like, wow, that was a cool experience? Or were you kind of like, eh?
You know, to be honest with you, I think I was having a little trouble with my relationship with my mom. And I do remember asking him about that.
And was that
helpful? And I think I remember asking, like, is it going to get better? Is it going to... Yeah. And he, like, reassured me that everything's going to be fine. Oh, yeah. And he said he'd be married by 24 or something. No,
not true.
That is not even sort of true. So I do remember that.
That's so cool. So you had a reading done, and then you got this weird friend, Nadine, and then you ended up like starting to talk a little bit more about astrology.
Yeah.
As I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, Kat is not just a Sagittarius rising. She has many outer planets in her first house of identity as well in Sagittarius. So she has Jupiter in there and Uranus and Neptune as well. And these outer planets have a huge effect on the personality and on the chart. They can add this different flair, this sort of eccentricity, something that's a little bit different or dramatic in the personality. And it also can at times, with Neptune in particular, have people project different realities onto the individual. So people might not always see Kat as she is. But in her case, we're going to see how this played out in a pretty unconventional life trajectory. There was no perfect, simple, linear path for Kat. She traveled many roads and discovered many different versions of herself along the way.
The part that we didn't talk about is like the travel seeker, viewing life through the lens of education, of like everything's an experience, everything is something for me to kind of conquer or figure out about the world. Have you always been into like education, spirituality, like learning about things? Like, I don't know, what has Kat's brain been like since you were little?
This is something that's very changed over the years. So this is interesting to me because I think I just used to be so scared of everything.
Oh,
you know?
Interesting.
I don't know if that shows up, but I was just terrified of everything. Mm. And that changed when I was older. I just really started to, be more adventurous. But So tell me again what the...
It basically just means I approach life through the lens that I have something to learn. Like, again, we're probably kind of going to double back on Oprah time and time again. But, like, her entire platform was, I want to learn about people. I want to interview them. I want to go to different places and meet all these different people. Like, I always think about you with going to India. Like, have you always, I guess maybe when you got older, viewed life as an experience to learn more and more?
Definitely. I love that. I love meeting people. I love going places. I do love that. And like I said, that was when I was older. I think I was just really, really fearful at the beginning. And then, but you know, even saying that, I remember moving up to New York with like $200 and an air mattress and a frying pan, like nothing. And was like, we're doing it.
What made you want to do that? And how old were you?
I was pretty young.
Had you done undergrad?
22. I was 22. Mm-hmm. I hadn't finished. I had taken some time off and then went back. And I did it to do international studies up in New York. Mm-hmm. And I just
But even that is Sagittarius rise, international. Really? What made you want to do international studies?
I always wanted to do that. I love that. I love the idea. I used to, I read this article in a magazine. At the time, I was not doing so great. Mm-hmm. I had left school. Mm-hmm. I was just slinging drinks for a living. And didn't know what I wanted. I was probably 19 or 20 and living in this basement apartment. Mm-hmm. That had like no light. It was very dark. And I remember coming across it. And like I said, I wasn't doing well. And I came across this article where there were these human rights attorneys doing great work. And I think they were doing it in India. And I just, you know, I felt like I was like wasting my life. And I wanted to do something that was like contributing to the stream of life. You know, I wanted to do something like that. And I don't know. It just put a little bug in me. And I always wanted to be in New York. I'm just one of those. Like, I meet other people like me that know they belong here.
Yeah.
I remember my dad said my first words were New York.
Yeah.
But they were not. But, you know, I just always, it's like in some of us, it's like in our blood.
It was in my blood, too. I just had, I remember saying, I think my soul was born here. Yes. The first time I visited, I was like, oh, like, that's not where I was from. Yeah. I'm not from California. I'm from New York.
Yes. You know,
on the deepest soul level.
Yes.
I never asked you, but where, because it's, I think it's interesting. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Charleston, South Carolina. And then I also grew up in Appalachia, Virginia, in the Blue Ridge Mountains.
What a fucking cool name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
In the mountains. So very rural.
Yeah. We were, my dad I don't know if it was a midlife crisis. I don't know. For whatever reason, moved out into like middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Bumfuck Virginia. Bergton, Virginia. Population like 500.
possibly. So when you were 19 and you like opened up this magazine article and you were like, yes, was there anyone else around? Like, did you grow up in an environment where like people were ambitious? Like, were you, you know, when you were born, were people telling you like, yeah, Kat, you're going to be a famous lawyer or like a successful lawyer?
No.
Yeah. So there's some sort of inner knowing that you were going to go do something cool one day.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Was there some inner knowing that I would? No. I mean, it was almost, I don't know that it was discouraged, but it wasn't encouraged. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not what people did. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in the mountains. Only, I think, 20% of our class went on to a four-year school. Mm. I can't explain what got me here. I just kind of floated up here. I don't know how.
To me, that's the universe shit. I'm like, yeah. You can call it a higher power. You can call it whatever.
It definitely.
Some people call it universe. Yeah.
It was something beyond my understanding and control. It was nothing I was doing that was getting me here.
So you went, okay, so the thing that I'm curious about is you also have that Uranus in the first house, which means like ability to change your environment. It literally just means, it also means you change a lot. It literally just means like, we should expect that as you age and as you evolve, you'll always have this part of you that kind of wants to reinvent yourself and sort of change the nature of who you are to fit what you've learned about yourself. So the reason why I bring this up is you're 19, you read this magazine article, then you decide you want to move to New York. Like, then what?
The Jupiter return. If you guys have never heard of this before, this is something that happens every 12 years to anyone, to everyone. So it happens when you're 12, when you're 24, when you're 36, and when you're 48. And it's basically when Jupiter comes full circle in your chart. And so for many of us, it's an exciting period of time. It's when we get to dream a new dream for the next 12 years of our life. We can get new opportunities or new relationships or just something comes into our life. Jupiter is the planet of abundance. It's not the planet of scarcity. But very often, the years leading up to it can feel a little bit more like a breakdown before you get to the breakthrough. And so in Kat's case, we're going to hear the history of what was 23 like and what were the years leading up to her second Jupiter return at 24. And it actually ended up being the period of time where she truly discovered who she was. It wasn't comfortable. It wasn't fun. It never is. And yet at the same time, it shapes us into the person we are destined to become. And now that Kat is 36, we're going to talk about what this third Jupiter return might mean for her.
I came up here, and you know, I said that I was like kind of struggling before, and that kind of followed me to New York. I don't think you can run away from yourself.
Wherever you go, there
yeah,
you are.
Yeah, exactly. That book is so... Yeah, I was not capable of running away from myself, and I kept trying to, and unsuccessfully. So much so that I tried to run away to India. That was kind of like I tried to get away from me and go all the way to India. And that didn't work either. I was still in India doing the same stuff.
With myself, yeah.
With myself, I seem to. And it was an amazing adventure. And then, but yeah, it kind of crashed and burned when I came back and changed a lot in my life. You know, I know I'm being a bit vague, but yeah, I just made a lot of changes. It took a lot of work. It took like a whole village of people to like help me change lifestyle. And yeah, everything changed after that. After that second trip to India, I came back and like the reentry shock of India. I think that's actually harder. You know, a lot of us that come from really privileged, you know, I'm very white privileged.
Yeah, me too.
And I think coming back in, the reentry from being in India really just, I just had severe panic attacks and I was, you know, felt out of control, was out of control and got some tremendous help. And that's when things really shifted.
And is that when you applied to law school or when did law school come into the picture?
It took a little, I had to like kind of get my sea leg. You know, I just kind of felt like I just got punched out.
Yeah.
Like I just like hit rock bottom and just
When was rock bottom? What age?
It was shortly after India. I guess I was about to turn 24. I was 23 turning 24. And I love the idea of like, it was a fundamental change. Like it really was, I had to change from the inside out. And I had, you know, I can't say enough. It was really just total strangers picking me up and like brushing me off. And like, I just felt like I came in
we'll
and
take care of you now. Yeah.
Oh, I had like a handle with care song on me. Like, I was such a
proceed
little.
Proceed with caution. Yeah.
I was such a little peanut that was all busted.
It was like peanut butter.
So cute.
It was just a little peanut butter inside the shell. And then they made me a peanut again. So I got,
yeah, I just got tremendous help from strangers.
So you found community.
I guess that's what's so incredible about New York. I don't know. The beauty of these strangers that came and showed up. There's just such a lifeblood and lifeline in New York. I can't even explain. So, yeah, I just kind of got mothered and loved back home. And, yeah, and at that point I was dropping out of school a lot, like going back and forth.
From undergrad.
Yes, slinging drinks for a living still, like finding people that were crazy like me, doing like partying all the time. And so finally I kind of got my sea legs and got my bearings. And then I think about 2 years after coming back from India when I kind of just felt a little more secure in my own skin. Not quite a backbone yet, but at least I felt a little more stabilized. And,
so cool.
Yeah, that's when I remember thinking, like, let me try to go to law school. You know, I want to. Actually, that was more what it was. I was like, I think I would like to. And then I remember bringing that up to a dear friend. And I was like, but I can't do that. You know, law school's not for me. You know, like, I've got family in trailer parks. Right. And nobody, you know.
I wasn't made for this.
You know, my background, no one's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And she was like, why not? Like, why not you? Why couldn't you do that? And it was very, very like small steps. She was like, why not pick up, like, just go get an LSAT book off Craigslist, you know, something so little, like nobody's saying you have to take the LSATs, but why don't you pick up a, like,
dip your toe.
Yeah. And so that kind of started the journey, and that's what I really wanted to do.
That's so fucking cool. We have to get into your lawyer part of your chart, but last thing I'll say about it, in case it's at all curious to you, is when you were 24, you went through what everyone goes through, which is called a Jupiter return. Mm-hmm. And weirdly enough, that was something super lucky for you. So Jupiter return is sort of about rethinking our dreams for the next 12 years. Mm-hmm. So it happens when we're 12, 24, 36, 48. By the way, you're in your second Jupiter, your third Jupiter return right now.
So that made sense that it happened at 24?
Yeah, it's sort of, and yours is in the first house of identity, and it's in Sagittarius. So it's kind of figuring out, like, what's my next, not only adventure, but the adventure that's very authentic to me. Because Sagittarius is, like, really not a people pleaser. And it's really, like, not, it's very authentic. And so for you, like, just know every 12 years, you're sort of reinventing the wheel. So I think right now what's very interesting is I'm curious, like, do you have any new dreams that you're considering for the next 12 years of your life? Or any exciting, I don't know, revelations you've had this year in particular?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's crazy because it is it's really different. Mm-hmm. I can be specific about this. Actually,
yes.
So much of my work and what I've done is I'm good at what I do. I'm an excellent attorney. Mm-hmm. However, I really defer to alpha white males.
Yeah.
Like, if they're in the room or something, I have to like consciously up. Like, you know, just like if a boss or like, you know, in a negotiation, I'll, you know, like, oh, let him speak. Like, it's not, you know, it's not even like they're talking over me. I allow it. Like, I just didn't feel like I was enough. Mm. I really didn't believe I was equal to my male counterparts. Mm. But mind you, I'm spouting off all these women, like, empowerment.
100%.
You know, I'm encouraging my own clients to speak out. But meanwhile,
but that doesn't change our internal.
Yeah. And so it was like hard for me. I could advocate for my client, but on behalf of myself, I really deferred. I totally deferred to an alpha male. Like, I was like, I'm not. And that is shifting so much.
That's so fucking cool.
That has shifted so much. I mean, it took tremendous work.
Yeah.
Like, it took work, but that's like a huge thing for me, is that no longer feels like my truth.
Yeah.
That's no longer my truth, that I'm subservient to a male.
Yeah.
You know, that my role is just to, like, and again, I, like, with my clients, it's different. Like, I can advocate for them and stand up. But when it came to me, like, I'm not worthy. Let me just do this for him.
Yeah.
You know, he should be the one in the spotlight or have the press conference. Let me just do all the footwork. Like,
so
let me do the logistics.
Cool. Yes.
You know, let me be the secretary.
Yeah.
Even though
let me be helpful.
Yes. Let me just take care of the logistics of this or do this. But it's like, meanwhile, you own a fucking law firm.
Yes.
Like, suit up and show up.
Absolutely.
You know, like, so that's been huge this year.
That's so cool.
Owning it, you know?
What's so crazy to me is it sounds like at 24, you kind of decide, or you were like kind of figuring out that you want to be a lawyer. Now at 36, you're like, I did the damn thing, and I'm ready to like own it. Like, I'm ready to like step into that power. That's really, really cool.
That feels really true.
What does it mean when a child was born on a new moon? The new part of a new moon is the word that I want you guys to focus on. I like to think of it as, all right, this person was meant to do something inventive. They were maybe supposed to do it for the first time, whether it be in their family or in the world around them or both. And they were supposed to not follow anyone else's path. So no matter what sign it falls in, and we'll discuss Kat's Libra new moon in particular, but no matter what sign it falls in, whether you're born on a Scorpio new moon or a Taurus new moon or a Leo new moon, there's going to be some mark of the inventor and the trailblazer in your personality.
You're born on a new moon in Libra, which basically means the sun and the moon are in the same sign. Okay. And so it tends to be this energy for anyone who was alive that day of like, I'm going to start over again. Like, I'm ready. New moons are always a time to like rethink inspiration, rethink what we're doing with our lives. And yours is particularly in the sign of justice. It's in the sign of balance. It's in the sign of harmony. It's a sign of like things being fair. And so to make you kind of like give some context, like I could write a horoscope about the day that you were born. I'd be like, everyone's been reconsidering how they want to seek balance and justice in their own life. Does that make sense?
Okay.
But you particularly were born on that day. So when a baby's born on that day, it just means you sort of like inside of you, you hold all of that energy. You were born into this movement of like, I want to rethink the wheel, reinvent the wheel on what justice and fairness and balance and equality means.
Oh, wow. That gives me chills. This whole idea of sexual assault victims and reshaping this narrative just is really important to me right now. We're so not believed often, like, and even child sex abuse. I mean, you're told not to believe a lot of times
victim.
From your perpetrator.
Yeah. And their system set up to not believe
systems,
the victim.
Yeah. So it's like two different, a little bit like when it's a child, there's so much of the time like groomed and told not to believe themselves.
Right.
Like, don't trust yourself. So they grow up not trusting themselves.
Right.
And then with adults, and a sexual assault happens, if a woman's raped, especially if she knows the person, the rest of it, maybe she does or does not have the capacity to really believe herself, but this society doesn't.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you were drinking.
Yeah.
You know, even if they don't want to say it out loud,
yeah,
they think that shit. Mm-hmm. And then you knew the guy, it was just a bad day. Like, mm-hmm. and they're so not believed, you know, mm-hmm. and that's something I hate. Mm-hmm. And it's fucking baffling how judges think on this issue.
Really?
And, that's so depressing. And how much I'm like trying to really deal with this. So mm-hmm. that's interesting to me. That's justice for me today versus crying in my brother's roller skates.
Yeah.
And back when I was a kid.
But the reason why I was saying it's interesting is like you've clearly had this in you. It's just, it's now that you're an adult and you're again in your second Jupiter return, it's turned into something where you can be like, well, I have tons of tangible examples today, you know, of how this shows up in my life, which is awesome. It's something I thought was interesting is it's in the 11th house, which is the house of community, group consciousness, like kind of like being a part of something greater than yourself.
Yes.
And so I know this about you, but I'd love for you to just say it as if I've never met you. Like, it would imply that your career and what you're gifted at is not so much, you don't make it about you. You make it about this like greater purpose. Like how does that, I don't know, what does that mean to you? If anything?
Yeah, I think it has to be that way. Mm-hmm. Like I can't, I don't know how to explain this better, but this is just coming to mind. Like, I'll implode if it's just about me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the work is too heavy mm-hmm. and can be too dark.
Mm-hmm.
I have to know it's for a greater purpose.
Yeah.
Like, I have to know that there's, like, some kind of help, like a reprieve for people, a remedy for people, and then I'm contributing to that. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a saint. Like, I swear, like, some of the people that go into human rights work are the most selfish motherfuckers.
Yeah.
I'm saying that about myself. I'm international human rights and touted about it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I was, like, crazy getting drunk and, like,
didn't
give a shit, you know?
Yeah.
I was just like a naive kid doing my thing. But anyway, I'm just saying that to make sure when I'm human and often selfish.
Right.
But the whole point is I have to know it's for a greater good. The client doesn't front cost or pay me fees or anything until and unless we win.
Mm.
And then in New York, it's a 1/3 contingency fee. So I get 1/3 of what the case, whatever award is awarded to the victim.
I see.
So I am paid through a recovery. We take 1/3.
But let's say the case doesn't go through. Do you guys just...
We just eat the costs.
Yeah.
We eat all the costs. There's no payment. The client doesn't owe us anything. They only... Yeah. It's only out of the recovery.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah. It's great system in that it lets people that otherwise wouldn't have access to a lawyer and access to justice have a chance.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. It's like just to not have to do this out of... Like I could imagine someone being like... Yeah, I want to pursue this as a case, but, like, I can't pay anyone right now.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty incredible.
You know, and I have clients that have unstable housing situations and would absolutely can't afford an attorney and have no access to the court system without this, like, contingency fee arrangement. And a lot of times nonprofits won't take their case because a nonprofit is just a different system and works a different way and just not able to help the way we can.
When you look at the birth chart, you can pretty much immediately see the different personas within someone. And of course, as you get to know them, you can see those different personas play out as well. And what I mean by personas is you have your work persona, you have your social persona, you have your relationship persona. You are not just one note. You are a varying degree of different colors, spectrums, feelings, emotions, everything. Human beings are incredibly complex, and so of course the birth chart has to be as well. That's why houses are so important, and that's why seeing where those planets are within the chart is so important to understand. So in Kat's case, we're going to see, we've already unpacked her first house persona, which is sort of her outward identity. We even unpacked her sun in Libra in the 11th house, which is her activist and her social justice seeker. But what about Kat's inner critic and her inner perfectionist? Where does that show up? In her case, she has a midheaven in Virgo, a Mercury in Aquarius in Virgo, a Venus in Virgo, and a Mars in Virgo, all in the 10th house of career, fame, and honor. And so what you'll see in your own chart is if you have any heavy Virgo placement somewhere, that's where you can discover your inner critic and where you are tough on yourself, but also where you strive for success and also just strive to be the best version of yourself possible.
You do have a perfectionist side. Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
And specifically in your chart, it's in the 10th house, which is the most public-facing house. So is there, do you have any feelings of like, I have to be perfect in the public?
Yeah. That's so funny you say that. Because even now with this podcast, I'm like, God, what if I fuck up?
Yeah.
And then like, I wasn't even going to cuss until you did. And like, then I was like, what if somebody Googled this?
This is definitely an explicit podcast.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
I like a good hearty curse word.
Yeah, me too.
So yeah, and I used to didn't think I was a perfectionist because I was didn't think because I wasn't perfect
right.
Or I wasn't someone that was like,
how could a perfectionist have flaws,
right? Or like a perfectionist in my head was like someone that went to Harvard Law and was up till 2 a.m. and then
it's
got back up,
yeah,
and got back up at 5 a.m. and I was like, that's not me.
Yeah.
I work, but the I'm not, like, you know, anal retentive that everything.
Totally.
But when I learned a different definition of perfectionism, of, like, it's almost like, somebody explained it, like, it's almost like you're sweeping a radar and you're looking for the one dot on that. Like, you just keep sweeping the radar until you find the things wrong. Like, that's what you're looking for.
Like nitpicking?
Yeah, and just like, oh, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, that you're
the tough inner critic.
Yeah, that you can't, like, you're always, you're never enough. You're just trying because you're, this isn't good enough. This isn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Having that voice in your head. Mm-hmm. So I do struggle with that.
Where does it show up for you? Like, do you hear that inner critic the loudest at work, or do you hear it the loudest, like, in your personal, like, where is your inner critic showing up?
I think it's mainly with work. Mm-hmm. Like, that, you know, oh my gosh, I got to do more. I have to put more time in this. I didn't do a good enough job on this motion. Or, and that's funny you say that about the public. Like, I have a fear of, like, not saying the perfect thing, you know, because it's so public. So that is really crazy.
Yeah.
That's really crazy.
But
that's, like, nail on the head.
Yeah, but what I thought was interesting for you is you have Mercury in Virgo as well. So Mercury is sort of how we talk, how we process information. I like to call it the brain, but I'm sure that's, like, an imperfect analysis of it. But This Mercury in Virgo also implies that you are able to execute things in a pretty, like, concise and structured way. And I don't know a ton about being a lawyer, but I do know enough that don't you guys have to memorize, like, a crazy amount of information? And, like, you kind of have to have an inner critic and a perfectionist in order to even survive law school, right?
Yeah, I mean, it helps. You know, I'm making it all negative, but it does, like, kick you into gear. Mm-hmm. But there's just... there's got to be a healthier way. You're not, like, beating yourself up, you know?
Way. Yeah, a balanced totally. Way.
But, yeah, it's... yeah, I think it does help you. It does... you definitely have to be... you don't have to, but I had to be driven to do this and, mm-hmm. like... and have that perfectionist voice, you're right, has also been a benefit to me.
Like, can you be super organized in your work at the same time where you're sort of like, I have a file folder and I take notes like that? You know what I mean? Like, does it show up in a productive way in your career?
Owning a law firm, you have to. Yeah. Like, I really, like, I have check boxes and, like, you know, because we have really serious deadlines. Mm. So it does. So that is a, yeah, that's a good part of me that, like, knows, like, mm-hmm. we have to be organized, have to know the dates. Mm-hmm. That's definitely true.
So that, by the way, sorry to any Virgos who are listening who are being super, who are like super offended by me calling. They don't like it when I say the word perfection because it makes them feel like attacked. That like because they're like perfection's not, obviously it's not a human trait. So anyway, sorry for everyone, but it's just it encompasses this idea of my view on Virgo is it's always aiming for perfection. I don't think it actually is perfect or thinks it's perfect or anything like that. But the ultimate goal is like, I want to be as clear to perfect as possible.
Yeah. I really want excellence. Mm-hmm. I really want to do my best possible job. That makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that rings true. Mm-hmm. I guess that feels different than perfectionism. Right. So thank you for that.
But it's twofold.
I just want to do an excellent job. Like, I really don't want to waste my life, like, half-assing shit.
Yeah.
You know? Like, life's too short. I want to go for it.
Yes.
You know?
But that's a double-edged, like, every single sign has, like, the shadow side and then, obviously, the wonderful side to it. And that's exactly what we just unpacked with Virgo. It's like, yeah, on its worst day, it is a tough inner critic. And on its best day, it makes you strive.
Right. For the worst day, it's like my brain is trying to kill me.
What happens when one persona in the birth chart or in the person is at war with another persona within themselves? This is not uncommon. A square or an opposition between two planets is very common and in fact should be expected to be seen within a birth chart. And yet at the same time, they're still important to unpack with clients. And so in Kat's case, we're going to discover how she has a very strong 0-degree square between her Neptune in Sagittarius and her midheaven in Virgo. So really what that means is her desire for freedom, escapism, you know, dreams, illusions, is at war with this very practical, very level-headed, and maybe even at times critical version of herself. How do those two personas compete? And usually, if the client is willing to look at these two different warring personalities, we'll come to find that they both have their strengths and their weaknesses, and you can actually discover how they can unite as a team and have a shared vision and a shared direction for where they want to move their strengths forward.
And it does make sense that it would be at war with the other part. Mm-hmm. I sometimes fantasize about being Iggy Pop on stage.
Yes! And can you talk about Dolly Parton?
I love her.
Is that one of your style inspirations?
Oh, yeah. Yes, she is definitely. That's so funny. I have a picture of her in my office.
She does.
She's so incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just a, like, she's so authentically her. Mm-hmm. She's unapologetically her. Mm-hmm. I love that she wears pink and heels and glitter, and she's in her 70s and can sing. Like, she's just – she helped me, like, own a lot of my femininity, mm-hmm. you know? Like, I reclaim the color pink. I love pink glitter. I really love it.
To me, I'm wondering, like, is there ever a world – where you could be a lawyer who dressed, I know times are changing. Obviously, in the past, that would have been an absolute no-go. And maybe still to this day is an absolute no-go. But, like, is there ever a part of you that wants to be these two things simultaneously? I want to be this very serious lawyer, and I also want to be this very dreamy, like Neptunian side of my personality. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think actually having you do the pink and having you do the logo was a big step for me. That's atypical. I think choosing you to do the design because you added like you listened to us and like we strongly and diligently represent clients, but we have this soft touch of like, we also recognize you've experienced trauma. You've experienced, if you've come to my office, you've been through trauma. There's not a, that's the baseline. Know that I find you credible if you're here. I know what it takes to report a sexual violence committed against you. So it's not like I wanted an out. So I think to bring it back, those two sides do kind of converge to create that, you know, that. Like I can't just be the like a half, like I have to be authentic. And there is a part of me that, you know, needs that soft side and the pink and like, you can trust me. Like I can be trusted. You're not required to trust me. That's on you. I can be trusted. And then, you know, so if I'm not in court, I will like bedazzled up a little bit, you know, but yeah, I in court tattoos are hidden and suits are on and you don't want to distract the judge, you know, you're there for your client. You don't want to do it to make it about you.
Just like in a reading, I'm going to end Kat's interview with the nodes, the south node being the karmic debt or who the person tends to be on their worst day or who they, the personality they tend to fall back on, the behaviors which seem to be a little bit impulsive for them, and then the north node being the person that they're meant to evolve into. And if they're able to move in that direction, they might find a little bit more balance and harmony and peace within their lives and within themselves. And so in Kat's case, we're going to see that her south node falls in Sagittarius, which is a sign that we've talked about a ton in her chart. It's not just her rising sign. She has all these outer planets in Sagittarius as well. So for her, she's going to really identify with her south node is what we're going to discover. If you yourself have a lot of planets in the same sign as your south node or very near to the south node, you will very much identify with the descriptions of that south node. But at the same time, there's a huge calling to move towards a north node. There's this huge desire or impulse or deeper knowing that you have to move towards this other direction in your life. And in Kat's case, she's had this wisdom for a very long time. And then we're going to wrap up her episode as we always do and just ask her, you know, what do you think your beautiful, unique, and individual birth chart was made to do?
Karmic debt around literally fleeing the scene. Long as I leave and I run away, I don't have to deal with my life issues. Yes. Sagittarius is sort of like on its best day, the seeker, on its worst day, like a flight risk. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But your north node is in Gemini, which means you're moving towards being the communicator. It literally means I'm learning to like stay and sit in the discomfort of whatever confrontation or issue or like life thing I'm going through and like learn how to speak honestly with other people about it. And for you, it's specifically first house, seventh house. So the karmic debt was around isolation. Like I escaped so I could be alone because I don't trust anyone. And then the north node is in the seventh house, which is partnership. So it means like sticking with your partner. It means like having these hard conversations in any of the one-on-one relationships in your life. And beyond that, of course, in your career as well. But I'm just curious with you, like, does that resonate? And also, like, have you started to meet your north node a little bit more?
Oh, yeah, that's crazy. I remember this from before, but I mean, now that you're telling me, it's insane and uncanny how spot on that is. Like, it still blows my mind. Still blows my mind. I mean, I used to be like, chuck a grenade and run. Like, I was like, peace. I will. Sorry about the mess. Thomas out. But now it's like, you can't do that as an adult. You can't do that when you have people's lives, you know, you're very much impacting on. No. And so the communication part, yes, that it has been confronting old demons and absolutely. You know, I recently spoke a little bit about my mom and, you know, that's a tough area for me, to be honest, while still keeping it vague.
Yeah.
But I recently did it was most honest with her I've ever been. And it was hard because it wasn't – I think, you know, the pattern was, oh, I'm great. Everything's fine. No, you didn't do anything wrong. And then I would run.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want
to never talk to you again. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You really hurt me. Mm-hmm. I don't have the guts to tell you. So I'm fleeing.
Yes.
Or I've really hurt you. Like, that would be my pattern. Like, I couldn't tell someone they hurt and did anything to me. I just ran away instead of confronting them. And so this, you know, I very recently spoke with my mom and was like, hey, look, you know, I can't keep doing this. This yeah. hurts me. So yeah, that was huge. That shifts relationships. It's so scary.
It's so scary.
So hard to do. But when you do it, like, magic happens.
Yeah.
You know, things shift.
And in your chart in particular, magic happens.
Wow.
Like, I think this is a universal human thing of, like, I don't want to say the hard thing. Right. I don't want to say the honest thing. But I think what's interesting about chart readings is just, like, but for you, it really matters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's
for you,
like,
the biggest life lessons are there.
That's
yeah.
crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. Because it's true. Like, it has altered my life when I've done the communication thing, mm-hmm. when I faced reality and told someone the truth. Like, life's been altered as a result. So it is great. So that makes sense to me.
I love that. So my last and final question for you, what do you think you were made for?
To be a lawyer.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Be a human rights lawyer. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much.
If you are a victim of sexual assault, rape, sexual abuse, and other gender-based violence and are looking for representation, you can reach out to Kat yourself. Her website is www.tlcpc.law, or you can email her, kat@tlcpc.law.
Thanks so much for listening to What Time Was I Born? If you want to find me online in the interwebs and the crazy Instagram world, you can find me at NadineJane_astrology or on my website, www.NadineJaneAstrology.com.